Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
What is... Dax, are you...
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
We are 20 minutes away from Bobby Belts following through on his promise to spill it all after the departure of Mike McCarthy. 7:20 this morning here on your home of the Dallas Cowboys. I'm Sean Sharif alongside RJ Choppy. Bobby is back as our Cowboys insider, and we got Pay firing up the fan cam, Twitch, and YouTube. And pair of the Chicago Bears fired up the PJ for Mike McCarthy.
Listen. This is from what has been described by Bears insiders.
This is like Peyton buying queso for someone on the first date.
This is from Courtney Cronin. You know Courtney Cronin.
She's a good reporter, yeah.
So she said they're conducting an in-person interview with McCarthy. It was yesterday. Their second candidate. They also had Ron Rivera in. They flew him in a private jet, private accommodations, which they say is a departure from team protocol.
Pun intended.
Right. Aha. Very nice.
Something they don't typically do.
They don't typically do this. They are like rolling out the red carpet for Mike McCarthy, which, again, if they don't typically do that, it's like either they really want him to be their coach or like they're like, all right.
They don't want to come across as cheap.
Yeah.
Because there was another Bears reporter during the season who was like, y'all think they're going to pay for Ben Johnson? Y'all think they're going to pay $18, $20 million a year? They don't even fly their coaches in. I think someone made Dan Quinn fly coach once, too. I can't remember who it is.
Fly coach up there. But like,
can you imagine being that cheap?
Oh, I know. It's crazy. You've got to.
Can you imagine if Mike McCarthy was on your Frontier flight next to Khabib?
Next to Khabib. As Dana White said, Khabib shouldn't even know what Frontier Airlines is.
Yeah.
It was it was Washington, by the way, that did that to Quinn.
Oh, Washington. My God. Yeah.
And he ended up there. Wow. And the Bears did it, too. They flew him in coach in 2022.
You have any feeling on Mike and the next job?
Not anything I've heard. I don't know that I'd... get all the best insights from the mic camp.
all right, 7:20, enough said.
Bobby Pelissero.
I do say, there's people chattering, though. Like, I mean, obviously you're hearing people talk publicly. It sounds like New Orleans is legit.
Cowboy updates. And do you think the Bears?
I think the Bears are legit from this standpoint. Like, why? They appears they're trying to sell him on them.
Like, well,
you know what I mean?
Like, it could be that, and it could be a perception thing. Like, it's gotten out that they look like they're a second-rate organization. Let's no longer fly coaches in coach for our interviews.
That's right.
Let's make that a new policy.
It would be a nice policy to have. But, you know, my question, did they do that for Rivera? They didn't do that for Ron Rivera, and now maybe they didn't have him in person. Maybe they did a Zoom call with him. I don't know. But, you know, if this is the second interview they've done and this is another in-person interview and they did this only for McCarthy, that would lead me to believe they might be trying to sell him on the...
All right, let's get the Cowboys stuff out of the way. CeeDee Lamb and Trayvon Diggs liked the Jordan Schultz post saying that Deion and Jerry have spoken. Why are you smirking?
Because I was just thinking, when you got into broadcasting, did you ever anticipate years from now you'd be like... in the headline segment, going like, they like the social media post.
Yeah, no. You got to adapt.
You do.
Got to evolve.
Adapt or die.
Cowboys.
They put him in their top eight on MySpace.
Josina Anderson says the Cowboys have already inquired about multiple head coaching candidates and their schedules. They are further along in this process than it currently feels to the public. We know about Robert Saleh, and then last night, Todd Archer reports Leslie Frazier, the longtime defensive mind. They are interviews. And then Jane Slater came out with a lot yesterday on the NFL Network. She and I've heard someone else say this. Jerry's leading the charge. Jerry's leading the charge on this. What does that mean, Bobby?
I think that Jerry is... You know, we've talked about Jerry as being a builder of consensus over the last decade, and that's kind of this early on has felt very much like him taking more of the lead than he has in other things, coaching search or otherwise.
You know how he like he's kept the card. He kept the Johnny Manziel card. He gave away. This is him turning that card in and saying, "Look, this is mine. I gave you guys that one. I said at some point I was going to take it back.
Yeah.
And I was going to do one on my own. And this is it."
And then Jane brought up number 82 and it set off RJ Choppy.
It's been my understanding that Jerry has talked to Jason in recent weeks. And I do believe that he was part of a plan that Jerry initially had when he was going to bring back Mike McCarthy. I think the plan there was to make him an heir apparent of sorts. Mike McCarthy sort of surprised him by deciding that he wanted to end these conversations, pursue something else. We can call them negotiations, contracts, conversations, whatever you want to call them. Now we'll see if Jason Witten will still be in play here. I just don't know if that would be in a head coach role, but I do believe that he thinks very strongly of Jason Witten and his future as a coach. I just don't know in what capacity that would look like.
Look, this is a disgrace. This is the wit and waiting. That's the wit and waiting.
I'll put on a t-shirt.
That's it. Wit and waiting.
Wit and waiting. I love that.
Thank you. And this is, look, and I have no problem if Jerry Jones like has like pinpointed somebody, right? But this entire notion, you think you're going to get any coach worth with any shred of data that isn't begging for a job. You'll get Robert Saleh here. To take over, to just look over his shoulder, to be a babysitter for 2 years. You think Dion's going to leave Colorado and come here for 2 years just to let Jason Witten take over? You think John Gruden's going to do the same thing? You think Ben Johnson's going to leave Detroit and take your money and come here and be the head coach only to be undermined? Like, this is when we say Jerry undermines the head coach, this is it.
I agree with you.
This is the undermine. Like, that is his best attribute as a general manager and owner is – he undermines the head coach at such an elite level.
If that's true, Bobby, that's really bad.
So here's the only thing that I'll say. There was a time where Kellen Moore was supposed to be the head coach in waiting, and that clearly changed. Like, I think you can have all the best laid plans. It doesn't necessarily guarantee anything.
It doesn't matter. The fact that that's your intent to start off is awful. Even if it does, so that doesn't stop McCarthy or someone from looking over their shoulder till the time when Kellen eventually leaves. You know what I mean? It doesn't erase the time span of discomfort and jealousy and second guessing.
Sure. I think
if it doesn't end up that Kellen's the head coach, even if Witten's brought in here, right, and Jason doesn't become the head coach in 2 or 3 years, that doesn't erase the damage.
I think it's fair to glean from what Jane's saying and from some things here. Like, I think that was probably partially a factor too for Mike wanting to be done, was like being done with this. Is like, no, I don't. In addition to all these other things here, you're also not going to have my head coach in waiting sitting here, who, like we mentioned the other day, has a damn mural of him painted over the practice facility to where when you walk out, it's like, oh, there's my assistant coach who's standing over my shoulder, both literally and figuratively. And so I think that if they were to do that, if he's coming on staff, which I anticipate he's coming on staff, I think they probably have an understanding of some of their targets and their comfort level with Jason Witten being on staff.
Do you believe, I'm not trying to have you like discount Jane's report, what extent do you believe it? Like, do you think that Jerry said to Mike, hey, I want Witten on staff?
Yeah.
Because...
I don't know if
like,
he would
say. Did we take it to the second step?
I don't think he spells it out that clearly, but I think absolutely it was told to Mike, if you're coming back, he's on staff.
I don't know.
Do you think you would get, like, do you think that this, now, let's just say this was a coveted job. Does this reduce your candidate pool? Like, is a candidate, yes. Of course, it does, right? Like, a highly touted.
The fact that this is out there now, like, what? Everyone's going to be side-eyeing Jason Witten. I would.
For sure.
Well, I mean, what's he here to do? I guess it just depends. In terms of
take over.
I'm saying if you're talking about reducing the candidate pool, like, is he being brought on as the tight ends coach? Okay, well, clearly they're not going to fire you and hire the tight ends coach. Is he brought on to be the offensive coordinator? Is he run game coordinator? So I think it matters to, like, the candidates out there, like, all right, he could be on. What is he doing here? Are we giving him training wheels to learn how to be a coach? I think a lot of people would be comfortable with some level of Jason Witten. Just how high up on my staff am I having to put
it? It wouldn't matter to me. I agree with you, Chuck.
Quality control. I mean, like,
he's there. He's in the building.
He's in the building. That's the number one thing. It's the number one, like, thing that you need is you need to be in the building. If you're Pete Carroll and you're 75 years old, I think you can get away with it. You know, it's like, how long does Pete really want to coach for anyway?
Yeah, Pete Carroll, that's a good one.
Right? I mean, first of all, he's got enough skins on the wall to be able to handle it.
Yeah.
Like, he's an accomplished, there's going to be a Hall of Fame discussion with Pete Carroll. And then, like, he can handle it. He knows he's not here for 10 years.
By the way, Nick Sirianni is now the longest tenured coach in the NFC East. Did you spit out your coffee?
Yep, I stunned. Didn't think that one was coming.
And then the Giants get rid of a name that I recognized yesterday in Jerome Henderson.
Jerome Henderson, a guy who was on staff here in Dallas, and a guy who they were actually frustrated that they lost. Dan Quinn hired him away in 2016 off of their staff, and they tried to work to keep him here. But Jerome Henderson had been with the Giants for the last 5 years as their passing game coordinator, their secondary coach. And he gets let go, and you may look at that and go, okay, big deal, what does that matter? Well, he's somebody who does have a good relationship with Matt Eberflus, and they worked closely together here, and they were considered the two kind of young guns. They were thought of if we're going to lose Rod Marinelli in the future, or whatever, that's the succession plan. It might be Jerome Henderson or Matt Eberflus as our defensive coordinator in the future. So with Matt Eberflus, I think, being a name that they'll probably consider a defensive coordinator, not like a slam dunk he gets here, but I think he's probably somebody they'll consider and talk to, then I think Jerome Henderson is somebody to watch that would potentially end up on a staff with Eberflus.
So you mentioned that, you know, Sirianni is the dean of coaches in the NFC East. Sean McVay is the longest tenured coach in the NFC. He's the second youngest coach in the NFL.
Oh, my God.
Only Mike McDonald.
Orioles, baby. Have we heard anything about Al Harris, Brian Schottenheimer?
I wouldn't be surprised if Harris is. I'm going to be interested to see. Harris has technically been a McCarthy guy. He's a defensive side of the ball guy, but he's gone.
He was a Dan Quinn guy before.
He's been to. He actually had been with McCarthy well before he had ever worked with
Green Bay.
Dan Quinn.
Yeah.
Same with Joe Witt, who ended up leaving with Dan Quinn. But they blocked Al Harris from leaving here last year. And so I know that they like him and they think highly of him. I would be interested to see, same with Brian Schottenheimer, I would be interested to see if at some point they get included in the interview process with the Cowboys.
Other news here on your home of the Cowboys before the Mike McCarthy with Bobby at 7:20. I should be a rapper. Las Vegas Journal Review reports there's a lot of momentum building between Ben Johnson and the Raiders. New York Post says Aaron Glenn has told people the Jets are his first choice. And someone else said, I think it was Dan Graziano's predictions, the Jets may hire Arthur Smith. Arthur Smith, Aaron Glenn, Ben Johnson, rumors.
The Jets hiring Arthur Smith is,
oh my gosh,
so Jets. Because
it's
like,
offense, though, bro.
It's offense.
It's the most defensive offensive coach ever, though.
This will be the first offensive hire since 1994, Rich Kotite. And it would be a guy whose offense is still in the same era of 1994. That would be that. You've got a guy like Aaron Glenn that wants your job, and you would not go with him, and you would go with Arthur Smith.
But wouldn't you criticize that? Because you don't want the defensive coach. You want the offensive coach.
I think Aaron Glenn is a little different. I know. I get what you're saying. I do want an offensive coach, but I also want and I know Aaron's not a CEO, but I think Aaron would take a role of a CEO.
How has Dan Campbell poisoned his assistants' minds, though, that they're two of the top candidates, and they go, boy, those Raiders and Jets jobs, how enticing do those look? Yeah. I want those.
I get Glenn, right? He's like, He's a Jet. Like he played there.
People are laughing at Ben Johnson right now. Like, are you crazy?
Are you nuts? Are you nuts, man?
Maybe like, Rappaport was onto something.
What?
That maybe he's not just going to be the best coach of all time.
Well, he won't without a quarterback, but maybe he is. He's been seduced by Tom. That's what it is.
I mean, that jawline, he can seduce a lot of people.
All right, the coaching headlines and rumors you need to know here on DFW Sports Station, the segment I have been waiting all season for. We had to wait for the return of Roberto, and we are going to get the Mike McCarthy tea, the behind the scenes of what really happened here during the commercial-free expressway with a Dallas Open ticket giveaway next. Here we go. Sean Sharif, RJ Choppy, the return of Cowboys insider Bobby Roberto Belt. This is the commercial-free expressway. We got paid.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Ah, can't you see it? A sparkling roadside EV quick charge power facility. It's chargers, control panels, and switchgear powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Kipe firing up the fan cam, Twitch, and YouTube. However you are listening, whether it's the radio, the Odyssey app, you are appreciated. Okay. During one of his many Mike McCarthy tantrums during the course of the season.
Not a tantrum.
Bobby Belt would just blurt out, "You just wait. You just wait until Mike's not here anymore. And I'm going to let you know everything that happened. I'm going to unload the clip." And the other day, when we had Bobby on after the Mike McCarthy departure and the news of it, Bobby said, Thursday, 7:20, I'll finally do it. So we're calling this, good nickname by Bobby, the Mike McCarthy T. Take it away, sir.
Okay, so before we start, I want to just like make a couple things, get a couple things out of the way, because there's already been a lot of discussion from people who are anticipating, oh, this is going to be a certain thing, or oh, you're going to get this here or there. First off, also, by the way, I'm letting anybody know who's listening right now who plans on texting me during this. My phone is going to be on the couch over there. I don't even want to like be distracted by it right now. So my phone's not next to me if you try to text me in the next 40 minutes while we're on the air.
I just saw him throw it.
So first off, for those skeptics of what I'm about to say, and you're like, I'm tuning in to be proven wrong, if you're looking for Watergate recordings or anything like that, that's not going to be this segment, okay? And that's not how things typically work. This is not going to be, look, I have forensic evidence here of this happened or that happened. Just like when you listen to the way things broke down with the Jets, the way that that's explained is through, this is what a lot of trusted people through discussions and conversations have said over time. So that's one. Two, everything said here, There's been a lot that's been said or that I've heard over the course of 5 years. Everything said here is only the stuff that I've heard from multiple people. This is not going, none of this is just something I heard from one person. There's plenty I heard from just one person, and I'm not going to talk about this because I don't know. Multiple people gives it some veracity, I think. And a lot of this, by the way, has been re-verified this week of just, hey, I'm thinking about talking about this. The third thing and the last thing before we get started, the whole why now angle of just, well, why, where was this the last, you know, 5 years? And yeah. I'd said on Tuesday, whenever that was, I said on Tuesday that it wasn't productive before. I was not talking about it wasn't productive for me. I'm talking about these people who will talk to you about things, whether they're venting or they want to let you know things.
Yeah.
At whatever level they're at, they're saying, it's not productive while we're sitting here trying to win to talk about these things. I don't necessarily want you to talk about it. I'm just talking to you about it right now.
And they're not going to talk to you anymore.
Right. And so it's like, it's more just a, hey, I want to vent about this, or, oh, this is what's going on, just so you have some context as to what's happening here. But I don't want you to just go spewing that anywhere.
Yeah.
And not while we're trying to win something. Eventually there'll be a time to talk about it, but I don't want you to talk about it until that time arrives.
My favorite response to that thought and notion, and I've tweeted a couple morons over the past few days, and they go, I don't get it. My favorite line is, you're right, you don't get it. Yeah, it's the same Jerry, Steven, why don't you cuss them out, people? You don't get it. That's Choppy's making t-shirts about Witten.
Witten waiting.
Mine is, if you don't get it, you don't get it.
Yeah, and I think also why now, because the full picture matters now. Like, we have a complete picture, and there's been a lot of discussion about Mike was done wrong, or he was put in an impossible position. And there are a lot of things about the job here in Dallas, and for Mike specifically, that he was put in a very difficult position. There's no doubt about that, and that has to be owned. There's been plenty of discussion about that, though. I don't think there's been nearly enough discussion about what does Mike have to own about how things went wrong here. There's a lot that was within his control that was out of his control in a lot of different instances. And I think the first thing to start with is 2020, when he gets hired, he had been out of the league for a year and a half or whatever it was.
Yeah, it was like December or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Had no idea what was coming in March of 2020 in terms of just the limitations that would exist in a COVID NFL. But when he hires his staff, he hires, I think the number was, it was five or six assistants that he hired, like position coaches, full-time position coaches, and an assistant coach, had not been employed in the NFL the year before. It was considered by some at the time to be, are you hiring buddies here? Buddies who none of the NFL wanted to hire after it went poorly. There's one thing for us to take a chance on you. We're taking a chance on an entire staff or entire coaches that nobody had employed in the NFL last year. All right, autonomy, do it. That's fine.
Yeah.
But there were just, it raised an eyebrow at the time for some people just like, okay, we'll trust you. You're building a staff here, but just, all right, we're wondering, is this a desirable staff, or is there maybe some friend hires here? Even the guys who were employed the year before, Mike Nolan was brought in here as the defensive coordinator. There's a lot of discussion from people at the Saints who were telling people at the time, we're not exactly sad to see Mike Nolan leave as our linebackers coach.
But a lot of coaching is a buddy system.
Sure. There's,
you know what I mean? Bill Belichick is hiring his buddies.
There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, who's the guy that's hiring as the special team? Mike Pryfer?
Not rejecting that idea at all. Just setting up why certain decisions were taken out of his hand at some point.
Okay.
It was a lot of coaches who people just wondered, are these the right guys for the job? Whatever, fine, do things your way. As much as it was like, well, Mike decided for continuity to retain Kellen Moore. Yes and no. I mean, a lot of that was, there was heavy influence of like, we really think you should keep Kellen Moore. In that process, Doug Nussmeier gets bumped up to quarterbacks coach with Kellen, or the previous year had been bumped up to quarterbacks coach, and he gets retained as part of that because just continuity's sake, the relationship that exists with Dak. They run into problems really quickly. The COVID era had been, you consistently would hear Mike and other people talk about, like, I was really only here for 4 years, or really this is year four here because year one didn't really count.
Yeah.
It was tough for a lot of people to just accept that because it's like, well, it's also year one for Ron Rivera and things have gotten better in Washington this year. Or, oh, this has worked out. Why is this Zoom era, you know, Microsoft Teams meeting there so difficult for you guys specifically? And I think it just raised questions of, obviously there were challenges that existed, but were these challenges that existed amplified by the fact that you hired a bunch of coaches that people wondered if they should have been in the NFL anymore anyway? And did you make the right calls there and the right decisions? So August, they roll around into training camp, their weird modified training camp, and there's early tension between, I think, Kellen and Mike because Mike has his own ideas about what he wants to do. Philosophically, they're not the same guy at all. They're not the same coach. And I think Mike had said previously he was never going to give up offensive play calling again. So yep. Coming in here doing that, that was not an evolution of just, oh, I've changed my mind again. He just wasn't getting play calling at the time. But he still wanted to influence it. And he still wanted to. We had that discussion when we said, if he comes back, is he going to have play calling? And if he has play calling, how much are they going to trust that he's going to keep his hands off of it? Because I think that that was a tension point for Kellen Moore to feel like, dude, you need to give me some space to do the things that we want to do here. All right. I know philosophically you don't agree with some things, but you need to give me autonomy. And so I think that created some natural tension where Kellen didn't always feel like he had the autonomy that he needed to have.
And real quick, I do think this is one of the problems here. Like, when you're bringing in, you can't just, like, when we did this show, Sean and I met, like, 2 days prior to doing the show. And it worked, but, I mean, not at first. Like, at first, it was like the first show, I remember the first show, it was very, like, it was awkward. Like, we didn't know how to play off each other yet.
Yeah.
Like, that is one problem here. Like, they want to force somebody on the coach.
Yeah.
And make it work out of thin air. It just doesn't happen.
I agree. I don't blame Mike for being like, yeah, you're the coordinator, but I'm not going to just blindly give you all the power. I'm the head coach.
Right. But the ultimate authority in terms of just what gets done here is going to be the general manager. And so if the general manager has somebody in charge of play calling, well, Mike, you're overstepping bounds now. You're overstepping directives at this point. And you understood the terms of it when you got here. You wanted to get here under certain terms. I will say, by the way, as much as it's been laughed off or pushed off, the whole I didn't watch every play of the 2019 season that was made there. There were a couple people that with the Cowboys that didn't sit well with. Clearly.
Well, that's your own fault for believing it.
Not everyone laughed at all.
Not believing it. It's the, they felt a little bit like, understand it's a joke. You're kind of making a mockery of this though on your very first time talking to people. We don't love that. And so I think that didn't necessarily set a great tone. September rolls around. They are getting run in some of these games. Even the first game they won against Atlanta, that was one where... The
watermelon kick.
That was the watermelon kick, and they were down big. I mean, they were very close to being 0-4 to start the season. And not just 0-4, giving up historic numbers on defense, which was Mike Nolan. And was a Mike Nolan, you know, was a Mike McCarthy decision, a Mike McCarthy hire. You started hearing about some instability, specifically after Dak went down. Because when Dak went down with the injury, that's when Jane's report comes out in October that says two separate players tell her coaching staff's bad. Just, it's not good. And there were some issues keeping everybody under control, especially once Dak was out and rehabbing, because Dak is such an important figure in the locker room and helping settle everything. It felt like there was a little bit of control issues. There were a lot of issues with Everson Griffin at the time. There were a lot of issues with Aldon Smith at the time. Those were sincere problems that they felt like there was a void of just like, where's the leadership here? Who's really in charge? Who's running things? And it got to the point that, and it, we're not going to play the clip, but I'll say it. There was the very famous Hayden Hurst clip with Dak Prescott, where he approaches him after the game mic'd up and he says, you know, hey, I respect what you said about mental health, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Not blah, 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 but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
The very cut before that, the Atlanta Falcons unintentionally left on the editing room floor. In fact, you know what? We will play it. I don't care because I don't want people to think I'm just making up this cut. The Falcons accidentally left on the editing room floor or didn't leave on the editing room floor. Brandon Carr, a former teammate of Hayden Hurst, going up and talking to him afterwards, where Brandon Carr, as you will hear in this clip, and it's a little difficult here, so I'm going to tell you what he says in advance, where he's catching up with Hayden Hurst, and he says, the coaches are S. Play it, Peyton. This is clip one.
What's up, boy?
So good to see you, man.
Likewise.
How you doing?
I'm trying to hang in there. I'm like, yeah, the coaches.
I love
having
it,
a good time, bro.
Good to see you, man.
And they couldn't, the Falcons, they didn't hear what was said. They heard S word, but there was, I don't know. Okay, well, we got to bleep that. I'm not sure what else was said. It was something, though, as soon as attention was brought to that, people kind of circled back. That disappeared from the Falcons website. I don't think that mic'd up segment exists on the Falcons website anymore. You can find it on YouTube repurposed, but it doesn't exist there anymore. So clearly there was some discontent in the locker room with the way the coaching staff was being handled. All of that leads to also that you've got the issue in November when Andy Dalton gets knocked down in Washington and nobody replies to John Bostic and what he did. There's some sense from people in the Cowboys, I think, that that's a leadership issue. That's young players out there, but you guys have clearly, this coaching staff has not set the right tone or culture or anything else. A lot of these, I think, can be explained away as first year, lack of communication, things like that. But it sets the tone for then they get into 2021, and I think a lot of people at the Cowboys felt like, all right, Mike, we did it your way with some of these staff hires. Some of this is going to be our recommendation now because this didn't work out the way it needed to. The Cowboys brass really pushes for Dan Quinn, not Mike McCarthy. That's a hire that Mike McCarthy, to be clear, gets along with Dan Quinn, likes Dan Quinn. Those are all true things. Doesn't dislike Dan Quinn at all. Dan Quinn was a figure that, like when we talk about the Jason Witten thing here, Dan Quinn was a big figure hanging over Mike McCarthy's shoulder for 3 years.
Yeah.
That was not media narrative. That was a very real thing that Mike McCarthy...
Remember when McCarthy called the Rich Eisen show?
Yeah.
But that was really bad by Jerry. Jerry was like acting Senior like Bowl. Dan Quinn could just take over the job.
Yeah, and that was Senior Bowl, I think the year after, it was after his first year here, where he said, yeah, Dan would be a great coach of the Dallas Cowboys. But that's something where the Cowboys said, look, your defensive coordinator buddy hire that the Saints were apparently happy letting leave as their linebackers coach, that didn't work out. So you're taking on Dan Quinn. I don't care if that's uncomfortable for you. We're trying to win games here. And that's what's going to happen. And so I think that became I know that became a tension issue that Mike expressed to people where he would say that he was hearing all that noise and that was distracting for him and that he didn't like necessarily having somebody of Dan Quinn's prominence who could easily take over his job being oversold. I think that existed with Zimmer. I think when Zimmer got hired here, I don't know how much Mike loved that idea.
Zimmer was not his call.
No, and you can hear Zimmer in some of the interviews this offseason.
Do you know who Mike wanted?
No, well, I don't know.
Did they go to D.C.?
I don't think that he... I think that there's somebody on staff he probably could have elevated. That I don't know. I can't say with certainty who he would have wanted.
Because it sounds like him and Zim get along now.
Yeah, and again, I don't think he has any personal issues with these guys.
Yeah.
I think it's more just what they represent to his own job.
Sure.
Well, that created a tension point when coupled with Kellen Moore. There's two of his coordinators now that essentially run both sides of the ball. He's a CEO, just kind of supposed to oversee culture. And he's, honestly, a lot of people feel like too distracted to oversee culture. He's too distracted by his assistant coaches to effectively oversee what's happening with the culture here. And he's too hyper aware of what's being discussed. He has people in his circle that will report back to him on what's being said in the media and what the speculation is and what those things that exist. And that's not a healthy place to be. Now you can make the argument, as I'm sure a lot of people would, well, that's the front office's fault for putting him in that unhealthy position. Regardless of that, he agreed to the terms of the deal, understanding that's what the offensive coordinator position was. And then the other stuff he was given autonomy over, he really didn't handle very well in terms of making those coaching hires.
But isn't all this further the discussion that the organization is not going to be able to get the coach that we want
because they operate in this way where they're like, no, you're taking this, you're taking that. It's the same thing. It's the same thing with Witten, same thing with Garrett, with Wade Phillips. Why would you want to coach here?
I mean, it's the Dallas Cowboys. Like, at the end of the day, you can say whatever you want. It is still the Dallas Cowboys. And I know you're asking these questions that are fun debate topics. The reality is it's the Dallas Cowboys. People want to coach here regardless of what the terms are oftentimes. I mean, most coaches want to coach here. There are big-name coaches now who there's chatter about how they think. It's like the Sean Payton thing. Sean Payton knew how things operated here. Yeah. Sean Payton wants to run things all his way, knows he would not be able to do that in Dallas, and still wanted to be here. Because it's the Dallas Cowboys and it matters. There's an aura that exists here. The Quinn issue became something where there's just this natural tension that exists to the point where Dan Quinn had intimated people, it was my understanding, had intimated people after a year or two, was just like, should I go? Like this feels uncomfortable for everybody. Should I just go? But I think he liked being here in Dallas. I think he liked working with Mike McCarthy on stuff outside of just that unusual factor. Now, over the course of that season, the 21 season, Mike McCarthy really sours on Amari Cooper. And I think he felt like Amari Cooper was probably one of the, in fact, definitely, he felt like Amari Cooper was one of the bad apples who was spoiling the locker room for him. That he felt like Cooper and a couple other players who I've heard names, but not consistently enough to comfortably say. I've heard consistently Cooper was one that he thought was spoiling the locker for him.
In what regard? What way? Because we just hear, free thinker. There's the COVID aspect.
It was
practicing.
And that's, Mike McCarthy was very frustrated that he would never practice. That was something that irritated him, that he'd show up for game day, but he wouldn't practice necessarily because of bumps and bruises and different things like that. The Cooper thing, it wasn't like there was, hey, I've caught you talking about this or I've heard you talking about this. He just knew that he had natural tension with Amari, as a lot of people did, because Amari's a really smart guy and it's like, you need to explain the logic to me of everything.
Yes.
And a lot of people view that as defiance. And then it caused some issues with Sanjay Law, the old receivers coach, that way.
Sanjay Law.
And that was a tense point. In fact, in 2019, when he played those three snaps against the Jets and went out, that was a big problem for the Cowboys, where they were like, your relationship with your receivers coach can't be so bad that there's a lack of communication to even tell us how hurt you are or to how much this is bugging you. That's a problem, which they're right. That they couldn't get to that point. But Mike McCarthy, I think, always felt like Amari Cooper was part of things that would leak out about people being upset. And so because of that a lot of times there wasn't anything that definitively pointed that. It was an assumption. He just assumed that was one of the people that was really stirring things up for him. And that feedback, that critical feedback of Amari Cooper to the front office about his practice habits, about other, how much does he care? That carried over to, I think, the front office. And that influenced their opinions on him to where when they traded Amari Cooper, there were a lot of people in the locker room who felt like this is Mike. This is Mike, not necessarily pulling the trigger, but Mike is the one who was in their ear that led to them doing this. And it caused some frustration for a lot of guys. Like, I talked directly to players who had said that they were frustrated that they felt like Mike, after the trade, walked around kind of like, yeah, that's crazy that we traded Amari. I don't know why they did it either.
A little disingenuous.
And some guy, that didn't sit well with some players, where they felt like,
You know why.
If you feel that way, fine, feel that way. But, like, own it when it happens. Yeah. Don't walk away from it.
Right.
And that, again, that's another tension point where it's like, okay, you seem paranoid about our assistant coaches. You seem paranoid about guys in the locker room. Are we totally focused on football here? Are we totally locked in? And that's where when you start asking questions, did you get the most out of these 12-5 teams? And it's a worthwhile question to say, does Mike McCarthy get credit for being able to oversee something that even with those ebbs and flows and those waves still won 12 games? Is that a credit to him? Or then you ask the other side of that question, or does that mean they were limited to 12-win team? Could they have been better? Does that explain some of the flat performances? Does that explain why there were times as a group they looked like they didn't show up? Were they totally locked in all the time? And I think that when you look at after that 21 season ended, where they went 12-5, they had the big-time disappointment at the end of the year with San Francisco. That was the Dak scramble game where they were at home and just got handled. That offseason, there started to be more growing tension between staff, player, those sort of things. They draft Tyler Smith that year, and that is something that Joe Philbin, the offensive line coach, never wanted. Joe Philbin's not a Tyler Smith fan.
You said that repeatedly.
Didn't trust him. Joe Philbin also was not a fan of Connor McGovern, who was here. Joe Philbin didn't think that Connor McGovern was a good enough mental processor to play on the offensive line. When Tyron Smith goes down in training camp of 22, and it's got to be Tyler Smith and Connor McGovern on the left side of the line, Joe Philbin didn't want them handling any of their normal checks or responsibilities at the offensive line. He felt like, nope, they're not capable of doing that. We need to have Dak do it. Dak's got to be able to do that. I think Dak and Kellen both felt like, these guys are ready. We're paying these guys to do this job. They need to be out able to do their job. And so that creates a natural back and forth where you're petitioning to the head coach to say, make a call here. Who are you siding with? And there was an inclination to side with Philbin, and I think that created some tension where it's like, all right, head down, we'll go to work. But some of our communication issues that exist, they're only going to get worse if we're just throwing more on Dak's plate and taking things away from this guy and half the line's able to do this. And it caused greater issues and I think greater tension. Just like, why can't we just get on the same page here? Why can't we trust guys to do what they're supposed to do? 22 goes long. You have the interception issues where Dak throws those 15 while he was out hurt. He came back late in the season. He threw 15 interceptions. You remember there's the big discussion about option routes at the time.
Yeah.
Again, very publicly, a lot of this stuff, it feels like when people go, there's never been any tension. Just logically think about things. When Mike McCarthy said he wanted to take option routes out of the playbook, Dak went in front of the media publicly and said, when was asked, do you just take those out of the game plan? He said, bleep no.
Right.
And said, here's all the time. You don't see the times they hit. There's this. That'd be ridiculous to take these out of the game plan. That right there, do you think that if there's a very public, Dak, especially who is the politician who is very measured, if there's a public disagreement like that, I think it's silly to imagine that there's no tension there. Like I mean, you don't have to listen to me and when I say that people say that there was some tension between them, where you've got, man, you're not listening to me here. I've got coaches that I'm close with that you are clearly tense with. You're pushing out a guy who was an expert at option routes and reading the same thing that Dak was reading. And Amari Cooper, he's gone now. And feeling like it's something that's almost a little unsaid or inferred that these interceptions are on me rather than communication issues that you know exist because of things that maybe you didn't have a handle on.
Okay.
And I think that would bleed out at times. In fact, it was after the season.
Because I always thought that was insulting towards a quarterback. It's like, You're not capable of option routes. We need to simplify it. You know, it's like not graduating to the next level. That's the way I always viewed it.
Yeah, and I think that clearly, I don't have to say I think it was or I was told it was. You guys publicly know those quotes are on the record. It was frustrating to Dak that they were talking about that.
Yeah.
And in fact, there was, again, I think there was an inference that more of these interceptions were on him than what the reality was, which is like internally they all know that it was miscommunication with receivers and reading different things. And the following offseason, leading into the 23 season, there was actually a talk at OTAs, and this is clip two, where you can hear Dak is not totally happy with the way his interceptions have been represented.
Mike told us early in the offseason that you guys went over every interception last 3 years. What did you learn, and how does this offense help you, or what they're doing help?
Yeah, he didn't quite say that the right way. That wasn't all that what happened, you know what I mean? Okay. It wasn't quite that, you know?
Dak's very measured. Dak, I don't think, is going to throw anybody under the bus. And I think Dak has been, I know everybody thinks I'm biased with him, but like, I feel about him the way I do because I like seen what he's done over the course of his career here, and he's an all-world leader. For him to be as measured as he is and to represent, you know, a couple different times, no, we shouldn't take those out of the playbook despite what Mike said. No, Mike didn't represent that the right way.
That's really loud coming from Dak.
That matters. And I think a lot of people have a tendency when they hear him in pockets just dismiss and go, you're reading too much into it. You see a complete picture here and you start putting them together. And I think you can see, all right, some of this chatter that exists coupled with this is enough to say that's smoking gun and enough evidence if you don't believe what is out there being said. After the 22 season, the Cowboys move on from Mike, or the Cowboys don't move on from Mike McCarthy. There's been some misinformation there. People have said consistently Kellen Moore was fired, that Mike decided to go out his own way. That is not the case. Kellen Moore left. 100%, it was Kellen Moore. Kellen Moore wanted out. There was the very famous press conference after the season where Mike McCarthy said, everybody's under evaluation. You know, I don't want to get into anybody when he's being asked about Kellen Moore's future. It had already been determined Kellen Moore was coming back. Kellen Moore did not appreciate a public questioning of his being evaluated when they knew he was coming back.
Mm.
And I think that that is where you see some of the tension that exists. And Kellen was like, you know, this has been a tough 3 years anyway, where I felt like I haven't been able to do the things that I want to do. We haven't been able to trust certain guys on the offensive line the way that I want to. And now I'm being publicly speculated. I think it's time. And this
is part of the reason that you and others are saying there'd have to be a little mending of fences.
Yeah, and I don't think it's irreparable. I think you can. It's just, yeah, you've got to, hey, yeah, that kind of was awkward
messy
on the way out.
Yeah.
And that didn't end well. And around this time, not only do you have the change of Kellen going out, it felt like there were some people in the organization, I think, felt like there were some tit for tat back and forth coaching moves. So Rob Davis, who was an assistant coach here, who wasn't really a coach, a lot of players viewed Rob Davis as, you're the spy in the locker room to watch after us and report back to coach some of these things that he seems a little paranoid about.
The mole.
And through that, Rob Davis was let go, not by Mike McCarthy. And I think Mike McCarthy, then you started seeing some of these, remember, we're like, why is George Edwards being fired when he's so well thought of? Why is okay, Kellen left? Why is Doug Nussmeier being let go? It felt like there was a little bit of, all right, you let my guy go, I'm letting this guy go. And it became a little petty. And I think that that's what then leads to, you get to 2023 and you enter that season and there's already a lot of tension that exists because of the way things ended with a couple different coaches and the way things have gone with personnel. And then when you go forward with the offense the way you did and the struggles they had the first 5 weeks of the season, and we've talked about it, we've inferred it, and we've talked about it before. After the San Francisco game, there was a lot of pushback from players on the offense, Dak, CD, others, of just like, these concepts aren't working. These things that we're doing aren't working. And again, there are two ways to view it. A lot of people want to give Mike McCarthy credit, I think, for saying, I'm going to hands off, trust to you guys.
I'm going to scrap it.
All right, fine. I'm going to trust you guys. And I think, by the way, I want to be clear, because this is something that got mixed up. By the end of 23, and then definitely by the end of 24, Dak and Mike McCarthy were on great terms. Just like Aaron Rodgers and Mike McCarthy seem to be on great terms now. They were not always. It's the same sort of thing. And that's a relevant part of the story too. Why were there struggles along the way? Why did they feel like they underperformed in big moments at times? I think chemistry can explain some of this, where you go, all right, there were clearly some tension points here that had they been smoothed over earlier, had there not been some insecurities about other coaches or about what a player might have been doing, or those insecurities not existing, you might maybe don't come out so flat against San Francisco in that 21 game. Maybe you don't have these flat performances at random points during the season. You don't have the poor communication because those things would have been ironed out. But they have the pushback. Dak really takes command of the offense after the bye week last year and was in a lot of control. Babe has talked a little bit, and I don't want to speak for Babe and say Babe said, but I think if you've heard Babe talk about this, you can hear Babe talking about, yeah, I think that there was some, he called it on the air with us, a come to Mike meeting.
Yeah.
Where, like, you know, that was, there was a point to air things out a little bit and just say, let's clear some things up. In fact, I think there was an interesting cut, and I'm not saying this is definitely connected, but I just think this is an interesting cut. This is clip three, Peyton. This was after the San Francisco game this year, where CD seemed pretty frustrated. And I want you to listen to this with the context of there was pushback in 23 about the offense after the San Francisco game, and then listen to this clip from CD earlier this year.
Last year we talked about this after the San Francisco game, and you had maybe the best stretch of your career. How do you look back at that and maybe channel that into similar?
I plan on doing it again.
What is
you
got
to see his face too?
What does that mean? Realistically, let's say somebody thinks I'm making all of this up, which I think there's been enough inference from other people that clearly there was pushback. And you can see on tape, offense changed. Let's say that you don't believe that, though. Then what does that answer mean? What does a chuckle and a log, I plan on doing it again? What does that mean? Yeah. Like, I mean, I think realistically you can connect those dots. So by 24, things, when he turned over trust to the offense finally in 23 to the players, and players felt like, all right, we've got trust here. I think relationships were built, fences were mended, relationships got stronger. And that's where when people say, all these public comments, yes, these public comments after a year and a half of trust kind of being rebuilt. But there's 3.5 to 4 years here where Mike owns a big hand of things falling short because there wasn't trust, there wasn't good communication, and a lot of times people felt like this fell back on Mike. Again, there are more specifics that can probably be out there that people wouldn't feel comfortable getting into or whatever else. And like I said, at the end of the day, if you want just the final note on it, the final note is they did trust each other and they did like each other and everybody.
You talking about Dak?
Dak, Mike, players in general. I think players pretty much universally liked Mike at the end. But to say there was no tension along the way is not accurate. And specifically to say, all right, they could have made nice in 24 or had great relationships with each other. The fact is from 21 to 23, there was a lot of tension with this team was falling short that felt like it could have been repaired had, obviously, if the front office does things a little differently. There's a big hand of things that were within Mike's control that were oftentimes out of control that I think led to a lot of disappointments that you see and why ultimately it's like a reset was probably valuable even if everybody had made nice at this point.
All right. I think it's time for you and I to react to all of that.
Sure.
Let's cross-examine Bobby Roberto Belt along with the Tolos next on Sean and RJ.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for their members. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Tri-Tip Roast, Untrimmed Twin Pack, just $4.99 per pound. Signature Farms Boneless Skinless Chicken Breasts, Thighs or Wings. Buy one, get one free of equal or lesser value when you buy two. Progresso Soup, 18 to 19 ounce selected varieties. Buy two, get four free when you buy six. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps.
Beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring amazing special guests from the cast and crew.
After that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.